And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, your weekly podcast covering everything Clone Wars. I don't have a catchy title because we're not actually talking about an episode today. Instead, we are recapping all of Season 1. There'll be clones, Jedis, Ahsoka, I went over that off the top of my head. Hey Chris!
Hey, it's the Rex of Season 1. How about that? That's terrible.
The Clyrex?
Like the best, like Rex with ST at the end. I don't know. That's
right. Yeah, we tried.
Yeah.
We never said we were funny.
Nope, we're classy.
Or clever or funny or smart.
Classy, though. Classy and getting classier every week.
Oh, yeah.
And man, well, it's a breakdown of the whole formula. We don't have a sexy Yoda quote. We don't have any summaries or anything like that.
I know, I was just thinking about that. I was like, this feels really weird. One of these things is not like the other.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we also had a nice two-week break. So did you have a good 2 weeks, Chris?
I did. I got some garage sailing in there, and I've been slaving over a hot smoker. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A hot smoker.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing.
I come home from work smelling like a campfire.
Oh, that's always the best. Yeah. No, my daddy always said, whenever we went camping, the worst person is always the first person to take a shower, because then they're the person who can smell everybody else.
Right.
You can't smell yourself, but the moment you take a shower, you're just like, ugh, I can smell everything.
That's how they did it in the old days. It was just like a big standoff, who will take the shower first.
Mm-hmm. Draw your shampoo. So today we're going to be recapping all of Season 1 because we've finished Season 1 of Clone Wars, and we're going to be talking, well, pretty much Chris and I wrote questions for each other, and we also wrote general questions, and we're just going to go through them and talk about them and recap the season. So does that sounds good for you?
It sounds great for me.
So we will lament, we realized about 5 minutes before we started recording that we didn't pick our favorite sexy Yoda of the season, so we might need to do that for season... We might need to add that to the beginning of season 2.
Yeah.
You're like, and by the way,
season 2 might be a best of the season 1 and season 2. We'll just throw them all together and
we'll see how it goes.
It's going to be hard. There's some good ones. There's some clunkers, but a lot of them are really good.
In season 2?
In season 1 and season 2.
That's yeah.
In general.
Yeah.
That formula works out to make almost any kind of saying like that dirty, 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 but classy somehow.
Dirty yet classy.
That's
We're like a host club in Japan. We are dirty yet classy. These damn rich people. If you're a fan of Oron High School Host Club, you got that reference. These damn rich people.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Willis.
It's totally all right. Why don't we get started?
All right.
So first and foremost, what were your top 5 episodes of season 1 and why, Chris?
All right, I'm going first. All right, now I have these in no particular order.
That's the same with me, too, because I like them all for different reasons.
And, you know, they're basically in order of appearance. So, right off the top, episode 1, Ambush. Because, right out of the gate, you got Yoda in action. And it's basically a great action episode showing Yoda run through his paces. But the subtext under it is the subtext that runs through the whole show, which is, you know, the clones have value.
Yeah.
Boom, right off the bat on the first episode. And then
question, because you can see my notes. Do we have any of the same?
Yes.
All right, cool. So we'll talk about those episodes at the same time.
We have a lot of episodes in common. My number 2 is on your list. Of course, my number 2 is your number 1. That's Rookies.
Yeah. Why do you like rookies? And then I'll tell you why I like rookies.
I like rookies because it's, you know, pretty much a flat-out focus on the clones, and it's a flat-out focus on brand-new clones, and just has sort of that... It starts out with that sort of, like, closed... You know, they're all going stir-crazy, and then ends in a massive battle outside with a worm. it's just a great general episode, and it's also a lot of these are I picked because they're just standout. Like, I would present this as a typical Clone Wars episode, and this is typical, whereas in all of a sudden it has a sort of, they sort of change up the story, and you don't have any of the major characters really, they appear in it, but you know, all of a sudden it's an odd little side story, and That's something I really like about Rebels. I think Clone Wars. I think maybe a little of that came from, like, remember the Dark Horse Star Wars Tales comics?
Yeah.
I think there like might have set a lot of the groundwork for, like, sometime every once in a while you go off and have this other little story and you meet new characters.
Like, for me, like, Rookies is probably one of the most important episodes of Clone Wars. And the reason I say that is because of the actual clone aspect. It came really early in the episode, or in the actual series. And because it came so early, they set down right away that these guys are individuals. Mm-hmm. These guys aren't just, you know, the random faceless person in episode 3 that's killing the Jedi. These are the guys that actually makes it emotionally important that these guys are killing Jedi, because they're now our friends. We know who they are. As I said in the episode, it's laying down some important characters for later in the series. Like, Fives is someone you need to watch the entire series, because he plays multiple very important roles over the course of the entire series. And so we get these early introductions. And I will say that, like, while Rex is my favorite character, Fives has the better overarching story. Rex kind of plateaus in season 4, and Fives has a beginning, a middle, and an end from season 1 to season 6. And you actually see his entire story, mm-hmm. and he's one of the more fascinating characters of Clone Wars to me. But yes, and also all the Moshawa reason, it's all the Rex. Mm-hmm. All the Rex.
Rex shoots a worm.
And you see Rex smile. He smiles, and he doesn't smile a lot, and that's really nice. I like smiling Rex, and yeah.
All right, my number 3 is definitely not on your list, and that's
Is that something with Grievous?
It's Bombad Jedi. No, it's Bombad Jedi.
Really? Are you fucking shitting me?
Yeah, it is. It is, okay. For another reason, another reason of them just going off the rails and going in a completely different direction, and just the massive middle finger that one is to the Jar Jar haters is just, you know, I mean, they could have not had a second of Jar Jar in Clone Wars, and nobody would have made a peep on, you know, from Cartoon Network to Lucasfilm to the viewers for the most part. But they did it, and they did the focus the whole episode on him and 3PO. And they pulled it off. They made it entertaining, and they made the Jar Jar character work in a serve a story. You know, I give it a lot of props, and yeah, it's in my top 5. And my next one is also not on your list, and it does have it's Lair of Grievous.
I was about to say, Lair of Grievous has to be on your list somewhere, because I know how much you love that episode.
Some of the things that I'm going to bring up, most of the things I'm going to bring up, I'm going to bring up in a later question. So I'm going to just keep it. I'll just focus in this one to the sound design and the background design. The design of his lair of that episode is wonderful. It's right out of a H.R. Giger inspired horror movie set. And once again, totally taking on a different direction and look in an episode.
That's actually something I really like about Clone Wars, is that, like, it's massive, but it still feels like Star Wars, even though everything's uniquely different. Mm-hmm.
And then my last one we have in common, and that's The Hidden Enemy.
Yeah! Yeah.
And that one goes under the same as like Rookies, as this is just a solid Clone Wars episode. This has all the elements that make an episode move and throws them all together really well. I think it was one of my 9 out of 10 ratings.
Yeah, for me, when it comes to the enemies, what I love about the episode is Ricky set down, yes, these clones are individuals, and now Hidden Enemy sets down, this is what happens when clones start questioning the war that they're fighting. And Slick is one of my possible like favorite characters. I might be a little influenced because there's a fantastic webcomic that I mentioned in our actual episode of The Hidden Enemies called Star Wars Destinies. So it's like a really, it's an amazing comic, so it's like made Slick a favorite character of mine, even though Slick's only in this episode. Anyway, it's an incredibly important episode because Slick is doing something that Rex starts doing in season 4, which is starting to question this war a bit, and he's doing it really early on, and it makes me, it, the implications it sets down for the Jedi, it makes the Jedi look bad.
Yeah.
You know, like, here's these Jedis, and they're bringing these people to live and not, to live only to die in this war, and it is the beginnings of setting down the events of Order 66. So it's just an incredibly important episode. And plus, you have Ventress and Obi-Wan, and they're flirting, and it's adorable, but not really flirting, because they'd probably, like, shank each other in bed. So, yeah. Sorry.
Well, the shank that, each other in bed type of flirting is
sex ever.
Getting shanked in bed, that's a valid type of flirting, you know, style. It's probably a style that never should, you know, they should never actually hook up, but it sure makes their flirting fun and interesting.
Hello, my sweet. Oh, my spleen.
Exactly.
Spleen. But just be like, you don't need both your kidneys.
It's actually sort of what's happening in the second season. I'm halfway through the second season of Daredevil, and there's a bunch of that going on.
Where they're flirting and then cutting out each other's spleens?
Potentially. Huh. No spleens have been cut out yet, but it could happen.
Meanwhile, I'm just like, oh man, this is a great season of My Little Pony. I will say the newest episode of My Little Pony had Pulp Fiction ponies in the background.
Oh, jeez.
It was great. I never seen Pulp Fiction, but I knew exactly what it was the moment I saw it. I was just like, oh my god, there they are. Because the show is fantastic. Wow, did you really get through your 5?
I just breezed through my 5. How about that?
Wait, Ricky's, Hidden Enemies, Leia Grievous, Bombad Jedi, and what was the 5th?
Hidden Enemy.
I said Rookies, Hidden Enemy, Bombad Jedi, Lair Grievous.
Rookies. Ambush.
I said Rookies.
Ambush.
Ambush. That was episode the other one. Okay. I'm sorry. I was just like, well, what was it? Okay. Well, I guess.
I think you got 2 others on the list that I didn't hit.
I have 3.
Oh. Oh, you're right.
I do. I have 3. So my 3 that I haven't gotten to yet. The first one was the quintessential episode of Clone Wars for me, which was Innocence of Barloff. That was my perfect 10 for 10 episode. I think that is the best episode of Clone Wars, in season 1. It is has everything going for it. It has clones, it has Jedis, it has awesome battles, you have a little bit of a space battle, you have sky battles, like, and it's just this really deep emotional story, but it's also transcending something deeper, showing the emotional sides of war and how it affects children. And it's incredibly telling, especially in our current real-world situations and everything. So to me, like, that was hands down the best episode of Clone Wars from season 1. And it's still probably one of my top episodes to this day of the entire series. My next one, like Chris, these are in no particular order because I like them all for different reasons. Cloak of Darkness. It's a very cool, awesome, like, female-fronted episode. And what's nice about it, it's all characters that aren't, like, your main Star Wars Anakin, Obi-Wan, Padme, C-3PO. It's the other guys. And they're all awesome, badass ladies. And you have Luminara, Ahsoka, and Ventress, these 3 incredibly strong women approaching the exact same situation in different ways. And they're all right and wrong in different ways, too. And it's just a fantastic episode with 3 awesome women. And that's probably... That's an episode I think every little girl who's a Star Wars fan needs to watch. At least at some point. And finally, my other favorite is Trespass. The addition of Rio Chuchi is... Rio Chuchi is one of my absolute favorite characters in the universe. And the fact that you have this young woman taking charge and stepping up and just being strong and being a leader and coming into her own. And you also have some of my favorite Rex moments in the entire series, like him walking and like moving his shoulder, missing a spear, and like just shooting. Like, that's still just one of my favorites. And him launching himself out of his speeder and crashing into things with his speeder. And we have Chachi died. Yep. Chachi died. So like that's just a fantastic
Joni,
episode.
Joni didn't love Chachi too much either.
No, Joni really did not love Chachi that much. No. But yeah, that's all the imagery in Trespass is just absolutely beautiful with the snow, and it's a character of its own. So yeah, those are my top five.
All right. So now we're going from the positive into the negative.
Do you just want to take turns asking questions?
Oh, sure. So you'll go first this time.
Yes.
All right. What character would you make disappear forever? And we've struck Jar Jar from this conversation.
Yeah, we can with Jar Jar. This was actually really hard for me to answer. And I'm not so sure about this answer.
It was hard for me, too.
Yeah. I put Nadar from Lair Grievous, the little Mon Calamari.
Oh, I forgot about him. Oh, I hate him.
He was the only one I could really think of, because a lot of the characters, why like I dislike them, I understand the role they were playing. I'm not a big fan of I forgot his name, but during the Ryloth arc, he was the guy with the little thing who spoke in monotone all the time. Like I didn't like him, but I understood his role.
You were not Nadar supposed to like him
this
either.
Character. What?
You were not supposed to like him either.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So he did good. But Nadar was just a character. He's annoying. He talks down to the clones. He doesn't treat them as equal. He's flip-floppy. He's not even that great of a Jedi. That was a character that I was just like, I could do without you. I'm kind of glad you died.
Well, I was just going to say, you got your wish, because we ain't going to be seeing him again.
Nope, he was Mon Calamari Sushi.
Yeah, he sleeps with the fishes. Let's just call him Chum from now on.
Damn it, you're way more clever than I am.
Oh.
What was your choice?
I think your choice is better than my choice, but my choice was Pappy Lerman.
Oh, I knew. I had a feeling you were going to get the Lerman.
If Pappy Lerman would have vocalized his reasons for being such a little wimp and such a pain in the ass, and then he would have, I would have given him some credit and understood him, but he was just basically there going, "No, I will not allow you to do what's necessary right now for this story to go on."
We're gonna be fighting and dying.
Yep.
You're not allowed to do the fighting.
I am here to provide conflict.
I am here with my awesome chin hair.
Would you like a bowl of my frosted Lucky Charms?
My chins do not move except for the hair on my mouth. All the rest of my hair stands still because we're not that great in animation yet.
Yeah, so, yeah.
If this was Rebels, everything would be moving on my body, but it's not.
Every fur, every hair would be blown in the wind. Yeah.
This would look like Monsters Incorporated.
Yes, exactly.
Now owned by Pixar.
Except Pappy Lerman wouldn't even be scaring kids. Ugh, never. I'm done with Pappy Lerman.
I had a feeling that the Lermans would be somewhere on this list is something you just like.
Yeah.
Well, now let me put my glasses back on. This was one I had to think about, which I'm still not quite sure of the answer of. But has your view of season one changed since you first watched the episode? Watched it?
And it definitely has, because by now it's sort of sunk into canon for me. Before I was watching it week by week, fresh, and just being like, "Oh, okay," and thinking, it might last a season or two or something like this, and now, watching the first season, I'm watching every character like a hawk, and unlike you, I haven't watched the rest of it as much, so I'm sort of, but I do have, I do remember enough of it to go like, that person's going to mean more in further seasons and this and this. So now I'm using a lot of it to put together stuff that I know is coming in the future. And you know, when it first came out, I was also freshly putting it into context of the movies. But also, well, yeah, actually, the third movie was out by the time Clone Wars came out, wasn't it?
Yeah, Clone Wars came out after.
So I had all three movies to put it into context to. Yeah, I mean, now I'm just, like, definitely more detail-oriented on it, you know? And I know, like, some of the, you know, how like, the music developed over it and the animation developed it over it. So I'm looking for all those elements in the first season to compare to how they change in the later seasons, which I guess isn't very insightful. But that was my question too. I don't think it might have been a very good question.
Because for me, I've been rewatching Clone Wars a lot because I'm doing my reviews of What the Fangirl. So it's kind of hard for me to answer this question because. Right. I had to think back before I started doing my rewrite rights of What the Fangirl. So a little over a year ago, I actually rewatched all of Clone Wars before we did this, before my What the Fangirl reviews and everything. And it was a lot of the earlier stuff because I got to probably about season 3 before I had to drop it for college. So the first 3 seasons, I was just like, oh, I remember all this. This is fun. But it was season 4 that I was just like, feelings. Mm-hmm. I'm actually rewatching it a lot very recently in my mind. Where it's different for me this time around is right after I finished my rewatch of Clone Wars, I watched Rebels. And so now watching Clone Wars with Rebels has been really great, especially with the return of Rex, with the return of Ahsoka, having characters like Hondo back. You're watching Rebels and Hondo returns, and then we watch a Hondo episode. So it's fun seeing where he was then to where he is now. Same thing with Rex and like characters like Wolf, and when we get to Gregor and seeing where Ahsoka was, and then seeing Ahsoka, you know, fighting Vader. You're just like, it's more telling because we watch an episode, say like Twilight of the Apprentice, and Ahsoka and Vader are fighting. And then you go back and you watch a Clone Wars episode and they're just like Sky Guy and Snips. And
yeah.
It's incredibly heartbreaking this time around because you know where they're going to go. And we've seen now what happens to them and where they go. And so it's also interesting for me this time around seeing where the Jedi are now in Clone Wars and seeing what the Jedi become with Ezra and Kanan. So it's not really the rewatch of Clone Wars that's changed. It's rewatching Clone Wars with Rebels that's changed for me.
I should have probably put Rebels into the equation. But, like, Rebels started changing my perception of Clone Wars.
Very much so.
How often do we
talk about Rebels when we talk about these episodes?
And that sort of happened midway through the, you know, this recording this season. So it started actively, like, affecting it, you know, in the middle of while we were doing it. It was not a clean experiment. We didn't have a control group.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is also like we were kind of experimenting with how we're doing this as well. But right. I mean, I actually was talking about it the other day. I've really been enjoying this new canon because like before the Disney buyout, it was hard for me kind of being a new Star Wars fan because I pretty much only had like Clone Wars in the movies. And then you have this massive expanded universe. And it's daunting because you're not really quite sure where to start in this massive, daunting, expanded universe. So what I like about the Disney buyout is that, like, you have a much smaller field to work with that you can branch out of.
For now.
So it's like, it's much easier for a fan to tackle than what, like, 15 plus years of books and comics and beer and all the things.
That was one of the big reasons for jettisoning the EU, you know, when they did that. That and not constraining, you know, not having to constrain to that continuity for ongoing stories.
Yeah, and so, like, that's one thing that I do like. It's very streamlined, so I can see how things in Clone Wars affects Rebels. Something I would actually like to do on our Clone Wars podcast, because it is in the Clone Wars universe, is review all of Kanan the Last Padawan. Because it's set in the Clone Wars time period. That's something I would love to do. But, you know, you see the Battle of Miego in Clone Wars, and that is a battle that affected Kanan and Rebels. So I like being able to see this connection to the entire universe. Seeing Yoda go from Rebels, Clone Wars to Rebels to A New Hope. Not A New Hope. Which one's he's at the Return of the Jedi? No. Which one is he on Dagobah? The
Empire
middle one.
Empire Strikes Back.
Thank you. Empire Strikes Back. So it's fun seeing this progression of these characters over time. You see Bail Organa in Clone Wars, goes to Rebels, how it affects his death affects Leia in the universe. So it's I like having this kind of streamlined universe now.
Yeah, it'll get complicated, but at least you'll be moving along with it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or it's easier to move along with it. I'm not, you know, I probably won't be keeping up with the books.
Yeah, there's a couple books I want to read. I definitely want to read the Kanan and Hera origin, where they meet each other. And I definitely want to read the prequel to The Force Awakens. But right now I'm still reading Wild Space, so...
Yeah, I've got too many books on my roster. All right, the next one I'm asking you first.
And, okay.
It is, who is the strongest, as in not like most powerful, but best developed character in season one, and who's the weakest?
I had to think about this one too, because I was trying to think of character development, who developed most in the season, and I was really torn between Ahsoka and Rex, and I think Ahsoka. Ahsoka, we see her very first mission in the Clone Wars movies. She's very green. She's messing up. She's screwing up. And she's still screwing up. But the only reason I was kind of hesitant on answering with Ahsoka is that she kind of drops off at the end of the season.
Yeah.
We don't get a lot of Ahsoka.
But still, I Ahsoka was my choice too, because, well, I think they meant it to be like that, you know. She's a brand new character. But she's a brand new character, as in she's put in there right with Obi-Wan and Anakin.
Yeah.
So she has to be brought up to speed, so they spend some more time on her. Rex gets some development, but I think Rex got some development because people are like, hey, I like this Rex guy. Keep it up with him, you know?
Yeah, and I think also with Rex, with Ahsoka, if you watch the movie and then look at the Ryloth episode where she's leading her squadron, that's like night and day. Like, that's a huge amount of development for her. And so I would definitely, cause like Anakin doesn't change that much. Yeah, he gets a Padawan. He's taking on this like mentor position, but he's still Anakin. Obi-Wan's very stationary. I mean, maybe that they're actually the better choices than cause I put as the weakest development being Padme, but maybe I should have put Anakin or Obi-Wan, cause they really don't change that much over the season.
Yeah. Well, you know, I put Padme, you know, it's funny. I put Padme down too as the least, developed. And, yeah, maybe she is less developed than Obi-Wan and Anakin. Or Obi-Wan and Anakin might sort of be sitting in one place. But they don't do as much with her as they can. They start to have her kick ass a little bit. But they could have really made her into a character up to the level of Obi-Wan and Anakin. And I sort of neglected to do so. And when she is in there, she's either... Sometimes she's kicking ass. Sometimes she's being completely useless, too. So I think there's plenty of people that are like sort of one and done characters that are undeveloped. But I think she was the one that got neglected.
Yeah, I think that's why I put her over like Obi-Wan and Anakin. Because like while Obi-Wan and Anakin don't have a lot of character development, they're still pretty much where they begin the season, they end the season. Padme, just like you said, like when she's there, she doesn't really do much, or she's being rescued. We get much better Padme episodes starting season two, especially when we get the introduction of like her and Satine teaming up in season three, and like her and Bail Organa have several episodes on their own where it's just the two of them. And so I almost put C-3PO, but then I was like, he's a droid.
Right.
C-3PO is not going to change from episode one to The Force Awakens.
Nope.
He will always be the same person.
He's just going to have more information in his memory banks to relay his stories. That's about it.
I don't know. Did you read the C-3PO comic? He's been wiped. Apparently his memory has been wiped several times, but he's had these ghost memories his entire life.
Oh. No, I have not read the series. I'm behind on my Star Wars comics. I have to.
It's a terrible read. It's probably the worst of the Star Wars.
That's
comics.
What I've heard. So, but completist that I am, I'm still picking them up for a while. So
yeah.
I gotta buy the last couple Kanans too.
I kind of
see him go though.
Yeah, that was such a good one.
All right, what do we got next?
Oh, sorry. I'm cross-stitching. I don't have my glasses on. Here we go. So this is one I know that we're going to disagree with now that I've heard your top five favorites.
In a way. But, yeah, yeah.
What was your least favorite episode, a.k.a. what 30 minutes do you want back in your life?
That was an easy one for me. Gungan General.
I was torn between Gungan General and I put Bombad Jedi.
You see, Bombad Jedi was the one... That's the one that kept Jar Jar off my least developed character list, because I think that he got at least somewhat of some character development in that one.
And see, I didn't put Gungan General because I like the fact that we had like Hondo and Obi-Wan and Anakin, and because that was the one where they read with Hondo and the clones.
Right.
So I like that kept it off my list.
I love Hondo, but that was the inclusion of the first inclusion of Jar Jar was like, oh no, Jar Jar. Oh, I like this. And then Bombad Jedi was the one that reminded me of why I didn't like Jar Jar again. It renewed my hatred of Jar Jar.
I still feel like it's a stronger episode than Bombad Jedi, because at least with Bombad Jedi, it was not even a great Padme episode.
No.
Yeah, she's kicking ass and parkouring and stuff like that, but it sort of felt like...
She's just a plot-driving mechanism in it. Yeah. All right. Now we'll go back to something more positive. Who would you like to see more of?
I want to see more Obi-Wan.
You got that like, one in capital letters in your notes.
Yeah, because Obi-Wan is one of those characters... I love Obi-Wan Kenobi, like... Going into Clone Wars, like, before I ever liked Clone Wars, because of Ewan McGregor.
Right.
I loved Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like, he's always been a favorite, especially just because Ewan McGregor is amazing. And so, like, didn't we have, like, six, seven episodes where he just wasn't there at all? Because I remember at some point in us recording, we were just like, man, Obi-Wan hasn't been here. Five episodes and he's finally back.
I think he was in those episodes only for like 5 seconds and as a hologram projection. He'd walk in at the end and go, good job wiping things up, guys. And that would be
He would walk in and just go, Anakin.
Yeah.
That's all. Just go, Anakin. So, I mean, I
put
just,
on his sunglasses.
Yeah, pretty much. So, like, for me, I definitely just really needed more Obi-Wan Kenobi in my life. He's just one of my favorites. And I remember us discussing how, in the beginning of Clone Wars, of whether or not Kenobi was actually a main character until about halfway through the series. I mean, I think it was the Malevolent Start we were debating if Obi-Wan was actually a main character or not. So I'm so happy when we get into Season 2, we start getting, like, Satine. So we start getting a lot of awesome Obi-Wan stuff coming in, and I can't wait, especially since Satine's another personal favorite character of mine, especially with what she does to Obi-Wan, which is challenge him a lot. One of my favorite lines of Clone Wars is coming up in a Satine episode when Anakin goes, all right, I'll get the bad guy, you save your girlfriend. Okay, she's not my girlfriend.
I remember that one.
So I'm very, very excited to get more Obi-Wan episodes. So who would you like to have seen more?
Mine's a little more obscure. I want to see more of that little Hobbit kid with all his repaired droids, reprogrammed droids. He was in History of a Thousand Moons. Yeah.
Jabo. Oh.
I like that kid. He had a lot of things about him that I probably shouldn't have liked. He was kind of like a video game character from another universe or something. But I don't know. I think he would have been a great character, especially with his similarities to Anakin. He would have been a good character to keep popping up and annoying Obi-Wan and having Anakin, you know, go like, hey, I like this kid. He kind of reminds me of someone.
If I can throw out an honorable mention just because it just reminded me of it, my honorable mention would also be Numa from Innocence of Ryloth. Like, every time we go back to Ryloth, having Numa somewhere... only just because with Waxer and Boyle and them in later seasons, and also Numa coming again in Rebels, that'd be another character I would have liked to have popped up whenever we go back to Ryloth, but we don't.
No.
Always more clones. more Slick is another character I would have liked to come back more and discovered more about rebellious clones and what happens to these clones when they get shipped back to Kamino. And if you want to see a nice fan theory, read Star Wars Destinies.
See, I skipped Grievous because I figured both of us, I figured you'd skip Rex just because those are both two obvious choices.
And we also know that they're going to be in the rest of
those are our favorites, yeah.
Yeah. So, which one do you prefer, Chris? The one-and-done stories or the multi-arc episodes?
It's funny. It's going to be similar answer to yours as I like both for different... I prefer the one-and-dones. I love... which is not to say at all that I don't like the multi-episode arcs. I really like them. As a matter of fact, I think they're kind of what makes a series because they allow a chance to actually flesh out characters. So then that improves the one-and-dones. But I just love a good... solid one and done Clone Wars episode. It's like a little Star Wars machine, you know. It comes in and does its thing for 24 minutes, and when it does it well and then wraps right up at the end, it's just a nice little nugget of Star Wars, and I love that, you know. But I wouldn't want to remove the multi-story arcs at all because I think they're what gave the strength to the whole series.
Can I say, before I answer this question, say something about the 30 minutes I would like back in my life?
Sure.
The last 30 minutes with Padme and Zero the Hutt in the Clone Wars movies.
Oh, okay.
That's a really rough 30 minutes.
That is a rough 30 minutes. And it was pretty much an episode, yeah.
Yeah, dumb. I just remembered that. that's a very rough 30 minutes right there. Just like you, I like both the one-and-dones and the multi-episode story arcs for different reasons. Now, if you've, like I said, if you've asked me this, like, later, like, in season 4, where you get something like, say, Umbara, where it's 4 episodes that are pretty much a mini-movie.
Right.
Like, it's 4 separate episodes, and they make up one story arc, and you can't just watch one, because if you sit down and you watch, The Carnage of Krell, you don't have the first 3 episodes to lead you into the Carnage of Krell, so you would actually be quite lost in the middle of this episode of what's actually really happening.
Yeah.
So, like, it's different when you get into these later seasons because it's not like Malevolence where it's 3 one-and-dones, but they make a big arc.
Right, right.
Or like, with the Search for New Gunray, you have, like, Cloak of Darkness, Bombad Jedi, and Lair of Grievous. These are 3 one-and-done episodes, but they make one story arc. So I like them for different reasons, only except for when you get into the later seasons, there really are very few one-and-done episodes
right
after season 4. I can only think of, like, 2 off the top of my head. There's one with Ahsoka and the little Separatist boy. I know his name is not Lars, but Lars keeps coming to my head. There's a little Separatist boy who's kind of a love interest for Ahsoka. That's a one and done episode, and that's the only ones I can think of off the top of my head. So we're not after post season 3. We're not going to have that many
right
one and done episodes. So enjoy them now while you can, kids.
I am. All right, next question. What was your top what the fuck moment?
I don't know why we had like 3 minutes of Jar Jar talking to a slug in Bombad Jedi. That it was where he was, like, talking to water, and he, like, threw stuff and something threw it back, but we never saw what it was. That was a really weird moment. I still don't quite know why we had that moment.
And so he can make friends with the slug at the end. So you know that...
But it wasn't even the slug he was talking to, was it?
Who
it was
knows what it was, but we just know that he's got that, like, Dr. Doolittle talk to the animals power.
It went on too long. We didn't need, like, 3 minutes of it.
Well, mine was one of your favorite episodes, Cloak of Darkness, and where it was the lightsaber up the butt moment. Where I was just like, did that just happen? That did just happen.
That was like the last thing I was expecting you to say.
Oh.
I was expecting you to be like, Lermans, what the fuck are Lermans? But nope, up the poop chute.
No, I know what Lermans are. I don't like them, but I know what they are. I don't know what that move with the poop chute was, though.
It was something to make you very uncomfortable. So what was your absolute favorite robot and or droid moment of season one?
Oh, this was an easy one for me. Everything with, let's just say the lair of Grievous. Everything about it. You got.
Oh, you're counting Grievous as your droid?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's my droid, man. We get to see his house. We get to see his pet.
I don't see personally as a droid, so that's... But go on, I'm stealing your thunder.
But I'm going to say my favorite Grievous moment is when he's with his pet, Gore.
Oh, Gore and me.
Yeah, and that he... you can. It's the only time you ever see Grievous like, I like this guy, Gore. He's my pal. I want to be his pal, but it'll never happen.
Can I ask you something?
Yes.
And this might seem like a really weird but kind of obvious question. Why do you see Grievous as a droid? Because I don't see him as a droid. I see him as a person.
Oh,
when I think droid, I think like C-3PO or R2-D2.
I see him as a... I guess he's an or a human. I guess he's got like a brain in him or something. But, I mean, he is literally... I mean, really, if there's anything organic in him, it's what? Lungs and a brain.
And eyes.
Yeah, you're right. Eyes. And that's about it. He is more machine than, I want to say man, but whatever he was. Whatever he was. And, I mean, if we had to go strict, all droid moment, it would be the battle with all the IG-88s on board the junk dealer's ship. That was pretty... insanely awesome droid moment. And I knew what you were gonna pick, so I didn't want to pick the same.
Okay, because I did kind of have an honorable mention that I hadn't mentioned. I liked the clones fighting the commando droids in Rookies, and like outsmarting them and all that fight where they storm the control room and Rex, like, dives out of the way and, like, grabs one and rips his head off. Like, I really like that moment. But that's my honorable mention, but my absolute favorite moment is R2 murdering Goldie.
Yeah. Yeah, old Goldie had that coming.
Oh, with his death murder eyes and the fire around him. Because I'm not a big droid person in general, but I have a phobia of artificial intelligence. So I'm just not a droid person. I'm just like, kill all the droids. I don't care. Well, now we're going to switch gears. We both wrote questions for each other. So do you want to do each of us take turns on these questions, or do you just want to do all yours and then all mine?
Let's just focus on each of us and go through it, I say.
Sounds good. So my first question for you. If you could be one of our favorite three Stooges droids from any episode, which one would you be?
Well, I mean, since all droids are pretty much interchangeable, I would want to be one of the droids on the Malevolence, for one. I'd want to serve on the Malevolence, because it's a cool ship, as far as, you know, bad guy ships go. And Grievous would be my captain. And I would want to be one of those guys on the bridge that, you know, when I screw up, Grievous just casually, like, conks my head right off my body. That would be my dream droid experience, is to go like, sorry, boss, you know, I frabbed the fibrillator when I was supposed to mark the vibrillator. And then he just like, rah, and like takes my head off. And I get to say something like, uh-oh, or, you know, I got an oil bath last week, clung.
I think I would want to be one of the firefighter ones on the Malevolence, where it was just like, get the water! And then you just be flying through the air. It's like, ah! That would be my choice.
Grab some buckets, okay. You knuckleheads!
Why is the pressure so high? Ah! Jedi! Alright, now, the most important Chris question that has ever been an important Chris question. The one that was going to cause him the most trouble, because he can choose more than just one moment, because I put moments as plural. Ready?
You know I'm choosing more than a moment.
Yeah. What were some of your favorite Grievous scene moments?
I'm choosing, like I said before, all of Layer of Grievous, because you learn more about Grievous there than you do in all his combined appearances in the movie and in the Clone Wars. You get to meet his pet, you see his house, you get a little look, just a little look-see at his history, right? You know?
I just imagine, like, Grievous on MTV Cribs. Welcome to my crib.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. And in this room, here I've got my smart-ass doctor who is the only person who gives me guff, you know? And you learn how it hurts to be General Grievous because he's got to get his painful adjustments and...
I really have these badass lines.
Yeah, it's just, it's the most you get inside of Grievous, except for where Obi-Wan pries open his chest plate and sees his lungs. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, you just don't get any better than that.
And well, did you have any other ones?
Anywhere where he's walking and his feet are going clank, 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 clank. My joys of Grievous are simple joys.
I just like him walking. And,
I like him walking, coughing, shaking his fist. I love the way that he cowardly will do that little flip leap into his ship to fly off at the end after he's destroyed another piece of expensive, you know, separatist equipment, having to go back to the boss and be just like, yeah, I messed up again.
Okay, I'm going to tell you my favorite Grievous moment because I do actually have one. The time I think it was in the Malevolence arc, but I might be wrong, where Dooku calls him and he just reaches over and just turns off Dooku.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I'm done with this conversation.
That is a great Grievous moment, yes.
That is my favorite Grievous moment. He's just like, ah.
It would have been even better if he started smashing the microphone on the table and going like, what's that? I can't hear you. We're getting some space interference.
space interference.
Girl, what's that?
And Dooku is like, no, you're just coughing. Stop coughing and talk to me. Did I lose you?
No, I'm still here.
Okay, I was like, did we smack our microphones so much we lost each other? All right. And Chris, here's your final moment. Because you talked about images and beauty and stuff like that a lot. So what was your favorite Ralph McQuarrie inspired moment?
Well, that's easy.
Space whale.
Space manta ray whale things. That was a Ralph McQuarrie painting like that you would see on a book cover come to life. It was just gorgeous. Gorgeous. Although, you know, with Rebels, all of a sudden with Rebels, almost every moment's a Ralph McQuarrie moment.
Yeah, the googly-eyed spiders.
I recently just found the original pictures that he did of his googly-eyed spiders that they used for that. So it's not, when I watch Clone Wars, it's the Ralph McQuarrie moments are fewer and far between, but the other great, there's a good runner-up is Cigar Face World. The snow world.
Oh yeah, and Trespass.
Yeah, Trespass. That whole world has a very Ralph McQuarrie painting feel to it.
That was probably mine too. To answer that question, that was probably mine.
All right, Hope, it's all you now.
I'm gonna make you answer these questions too, since I answered yours.
Okay, I might not have as much to offer as you on these subjects, but yeah, sure. Give a brief summary of Rex's evolution, or Rexvolution, if you will, for season one.
Okay, so I didn't actually write down anything in my notes for this, because I was just wondering it from the beginning. So, in the beginning, there was Rex. And he was made on Kamino. And as of season one, the first time we meet Captain Rex is he's on Christophsis, and he's just like, oh man, this is a crazy-ass thing, and Hope is just like, holy crap, who's this hot guy? And so he's fighting with Anakin. He's Anakin Skywalker's right-hand man, who we've actually established that he's Anakin's right hand, because Anakin doesn't have a right hand, that's why. And so Ahsoka comes, and we get the classic line of, in my book, experience is everything, and him and Ahsoka start their lifelong friendship together, and he has this lifelong also bromance, at least through the Clone Wars with Anakin, where he's constantly saving Anakin, and if Rex had long hair, he'd be flying in the wind. And so, as Rex develops more and more, then we get to something like Rookies, where we finally get to see him on his own. And being on his own, he's all just like, hey, Cody. And Cody's just like, oh, cool. I can see that you're actually a really developed person. And Rex was like, thank you. Can I take this mission? And Cody was like, I was going to tell you to take the mission anyway because I don't change at all. And that's why I shoot Obi-Wan Kenobi in Order 66. But you, my friend, will change all along the way. And Rex is like, cool. And so then he meets Fives. And Fives and him starts a 3-year-long friendship as well. And Fives and him and along with like Echo and Heavy dies. Heavy gets blown up. And so they defeat the space slugs and they stop Grievous, and it's to set up the fight of Kamino, that is, I believe, season 3. And then Rex is all like, cool, that I actually learned something from being on my own. Well, then Rex keeps going along, and he saves Anakin some more, and he makes more friendships, and then he has a really bad time with Lerman, because then he, like, breaks his arm, and he has to fight these dinosaur things, but he just protects his general because they're secretly in love. Rex loves Anakin, and Anakin loves Rex forever. Anyway, so moving along, right along to the hidden enemy, you were just like, oh man, we're back at Christophsis, but this is actually really taking place during the movie timeline, so it doesn't quite make sense with the developments of rookies, but that's okay, because at least now we're more further developed. And Slick's like, hey guys, I don't like being fighting this war. And Rex is like, well, you have to fight this war. And he's like, I don't know. Well, why don't you just think about it? And Rex thinks about it and goes, huh, well, maybe there is actually more to this. And Cody is just like, I'm ignoring everything because if I don't actually develop, then I can't shoot Obi-Wan in episode 3. And so, yeah. And Rex is like, I'm just going to pocket this away because maybe this is actually important. And we start thinking about and start questioning why we're actually fighting this war. And, huh, clones can be individuals. But we're still in Christophsis, so technically this is taking place before the movie. And I haven't actually quite met Ahsoka yet. And we haven't joined the Rebels yet. But it's fine. So I'm going to think about this some more. And develop. And we get to see a lot of him without his head. But it's kind of weird because the animation doesn't move that much. So his eyes don't move a lot. And then he meets Joni and Chachi. And Joni is really cool, but Chachi makes him fight a war. And he's just kind of like, hey, I don't really want to fight the Talos. Please don't tell me what to do. Because you're not my Anakin, tell me what to do. And Anakin's like, don't fight, buddy. And he's like, okay. But then Chachi is just like, you're gonna fight. And Rex is like, okay, well, I'm just gonna awesomely launch myself out of a speeder and crash my speeder into a cat werewolf thing and then shoot it. I'm gonna shoot it all. It's gonna be great. And Rex was just like, well, that was a really fun time and thanks, because I really wasn't on Ryloth that much. I was on the ship of Ryloth that Anakin was commanding and stuff, and then I'm just gonna go save my Anakin sitting dead in space of Ryloth, so I'm gonna go rescue him again. By the way, Ahsoka, good job with your mission. Bye. That was Rex in season 1.
That was pretty amazing. Not after no notes, huh?
No.
Longest answer yet today, too.
I just stole that from memory.
I'll make sure I have some Rexy music over that one.
Was it okay?
Oh, it was okay. Yes. I think that was okay, yes.
But you were muted, so were you laughing?
That's why I was muted. When you see me mute out, you know that I'm enjoying myself. That I'm going to make sure I'm not interrupting this one.
I can feel myself blushing. I don't know why I'm blushing, but I can feel myself blushing. Oh, man. Oh,
well, you're
fun.
All rexed up.
Yeah. I was.
You're in a state of rexedacy. What's there to be said?
I'm just hoping I made sense.
Well, my answer to that's going to be a little shorter. I think Rex...
What was your summary of Rex's evolution? Yours is actually going to be more logical and not fandom-based.
Yeah, it's more just in the context of the series. But, you know, you would have thought that it would have been Cody, since he was name-checked in the other movies, in the actual movies, that they would sort of flesh out a character, you know, a clone character. But it seems like Rex is like the... He's not the every clone, because he's kind of a standout clone, but he's the one that, like, whose character gets focused on, you know, as the most as a clone with human and you know, developing characteristics that you know, humanize the clones. You know, he's like the prototype, you know. He's going to be the proxy through the whole of the clones for us to watch.
Mm-hmm. They actually, in the 100th episode, where we meet Gregor and everything, there's an image of Rex. And if you watch the 100th episode featurette, Dave Filoni is describing Rex as, I think he says, like, the most heroic of the clones. And he is, like, the representation of what every clone should be.
Should be, yeah, yeah.
But not.
but at the same time. And
they're all kind of fuck ups, and I love them. Look at Waxer and Boyle. They're just like, they spend the entire episode going, shit, we're going to get in trouble. But there's this little girl. Fuck this little girl. And Boyle's like, but can we take her home with us? No. But I want to keep her, Waxer. No.
She likes candy.
Stop getting attached. Boyle, put her down. Boyle, fine. But yeah, like, Rex is the representation of what every clone should be, but they're not. can I also throw out the best clone line of the entire series?
Oh, be my guest.
In Rookies, what's it called? Heavy goes, ooh, medias. That or I think it was Boyle's, and they were following Numa, and I think it was Boyle, I believe, and he was just like, I have binders for her if we need them. What? Nothing. All right.
Okay, now that we're talking about clones and binders, I'm going to move you on, Hope. I almost called you clone. I'm going to move you on, clone. Move along, clone.
Maybe not quite. I do see Rex as demisexual, but that's just me.
Yeah, we know.
If I had to pick a sexual orientation for Rex, I would say he's demisexual.
That he was hope-sexual?
No, demisexual, meaning that he is only sexually attracted to people once he gets to know them.
He's hoposexual.
Hoposexual.
He's a big hopo.
I keep saying, thinking you're saying hippo.
No.
Like a hippopotamus. I'm like, that's offensive. Don't be offensive to the hippos.
He's a hippo bottom, too. A hippobotamus. All right. Next question. Which Rexy episode would you inject yourself into as a character?
I chose the word inject. I know. And I actually kind of...
The hot Rex injection.
I kind of fit with this question a bit. Not because of the Rex. I chose an episode that Rex was in, and then I chose a character I wanted to be that had nothing to do with Rex. So I kind of fucked with the question a bit. I actually chose Trespass, but that's just not because of Rex, but because of Ryo Chuchi. I just would really love to be in her shoes for a day. Because she's just one of my favorite characters, and I think she's very inspiring. And as I said, when we did Trespass, I wish she was in the show more, because she's a really interesting character to me, and I think she's an incredibly strong character. And you guys should know that I actually really ship her with the clone Kix. Don't ask me how. Her and Kix are my favorite couple, and I don't even ask me how I got that. But anyway, I just really liked, I like Ryo Chuchi a lot, and I think she's a really great character. But if I had to be a character that Rex interacts with, I would probably say Ahsoka. Because I think Ahsoka and Rex are one of my ships. So I really like Ahsoka and Rex together. They're one of my favorite ships. So yeah, I would like to be in Ahsoka or Ryo Chuchi shoes for a day.
See, I would, if I was going to be in, it's funny, I would be in the same episode. I would be in Trespass, but for totally different reasons.
Who would you be? Obi-Wan? Or a cigar face?
No, I would just be me, but I'd be like, clone me, you know, that I could just be a clone in. You know, I wouldn't have to be one of the characters in there. Because I'm not, I'm thinking if I was going to be in a clone, you know, Rex-centric episode, usually that means I'm going to be in some sort of firefight. You know, I'm going to be in the shit because I'm with the clones. So being from the, this is a totally logical one. Sorry, I'm not.
Yeah, I will say
not
I
as Rexed up as you are. Yeah, so I since it's in a snowy environment, I mean, I grew up in Hoth-like circumstances. And I love those snow speeders that they have. I love them. That, you know, they're sort of adapted speeder bike. So I would love to be flying around on the snow speeders. And I think my chances for survival would be much higher in a snowy battle. You know what I mean? And I'd get to meet some cigar faces. And they seem like fun. And they're cigar faces.
They're a good party.
Sure. All right, your best women kicking ass moment.
Oh, that's easy. Cloak of Darkness, like the entire episode.
Yeah.
Especially the fight between Luminara of Interest and then when Ahsoka joins the fight. But, like, there's just so much great moments in that. You have Luminara poop shooting people. Yeah. You have Ahsoka, like, questioning the Jedi Order.
Do you think Yoda was like, oh, today we teach you the old poop shoot?
Yes!
Only use this one in dire circumstances.
It doesn't kill, but it will hurt like a bitch.
Very uncomfortable.
But what I also like about Cloak of Darkness is one of the few times that Ventress wins in the series. Yeah. There's also just like a lot of cool moments, like her jumping in the elevator and then just going, like skidding down the elevator on her lightsabers. Like, that's just such an awesome moment. And just a lot of the, like, the imagery, like her fight with Luminara and like the steam hitting Luminara's eye. There was really nice animation showing her eyes swelling.
Yeah.
It's one of the nicer moments of animation, which it sounds kind of grotesque, but the animation's so rough in season one, I'll take what I can get. It's just that entire episode is nothing but women kicking ass in different ways. And I like that Ahsoka's already this early on kind of questioning the Jedi Order, especially since we know what direction she goes into the future. And so I just, the entire episode is just a fantastic episode. It's one of my absolutely favorite women's episodes. As I said, every young girl should watch Cloak of Darkness if you're a Star Wars fan, because you get to see three strong women's kick-ass, and you get a nice little glimpse of James Marster being Argaius.
I think Clone Wars, and this is sort of, I'm going to have 2 points, I guess, on this question. And the first thing that came to my mind with this question was Cloak of Darkness. I was literally thinking of the episode Cloak of Darkness when I wrote the question for you. But then I started thinking about it, and I think that's the best example. But my favorite example, and it's funny because my mind whips back to the point that wasn't ass-kicking about that. I can't remember the name of the episode, but it was the one where they're chasing Grievous on the train.
It was the third Malevolence episode, but
right,
I don't remember.
Right, right. And she and Anakin are just working in concert together, you know, as an ass-kicking team. And, you know, they have their one little romantic moment on the train, but it's just this sort of spot, you know, a mellow, you know, a spot where they get to catch their breath, have a little kiss, and then it's back to kicking ass. So that would be my favorite woman kicking ass moment. But the other point I wanted to make just about Clone Wars in general is I think in a lot of ways it's, you know, looking at, I guess, what are you going to call it, like phase 3 Star Wars now, you know, the originals, the prequels, and now the Disney version of it. Clone Wars was sort of ahead of the curve because I was thinking about this when I was thinking about the prequels the other day is really it was just like in the prequels and the original trilogy. You basically have Amidala and Princess Leia, and those are your women for all those 6 movies. There's other women in it. There's Mon Mothma, and there's a couple female pilots when you get into the prequels. But, like, if you're a girl and you want to, like, project yourself into the Star Wars movies, you pretty much had Leia and Amidala for the 2 trilogies. But all of a sudden with Clone Wars, you have a lot of female characters. And it's just like The Force Awakens. You pretty much have a galaxy where the main characters are pretty much like reflect the fact that 50% of all humanoid life is female or alien life has female, you know, there's female characters running around. And Clone Wars was the first thing that did that introduced a proportion more close to reality, thus giving girls something to watch. Not that they won't watch it if there's not girls in it, but giving girls something to be able to project themselves into on the screen, you know, to be able to identify with. This is the first time that it happened was in Clone Wars. And I don't know if the success of Clone Wars had anything to do with it, but it's continued on, you know. It's the same in Rebels, and it's the same in The Force Awakens. there's strong female characters, and it's not a, you know, forced, shoehorned in thing, you know. Maybe at some point in the boardrooms they were like, you know, let's put some more female characters in. I'm sure Disney was, but Disney is a company, and they realize that half of the people that watch Disney movies happen to be women. So I think this sort of set the cast for it, you know, cast the die, dyed the cast. I don't know what the phrase is, but made the mold, you know, for future Star Wars. And pretty much after the original trilogy, Clone Wars was the only continuing Star Wars thing. So after that, it's only been Force Awakens and Rebels and books and comics, but they've all followed the tradition of Clone Wars, you know, of having strong female characters.
So back in December on What the Fangirl, I wrote a piece about my personal journey to The Force Awakens. It was more of a piece, if you've listened to the very first episode of this podcast, you know, back in December, our good friend Sean passed away. And so it was more of a piece just talking about dealing with that. But I did open discussing how when I was a kid, I liked Star Wars, but I never really loved it. My mom introduced me to it, and I was like, oh, cool, Star Wars, this is great. And a lot of it is because, like, while I recognized that Leia was a really cool character, I could never, like, associate with Leia. I never could really see myself in Leia. And then same thing with Padme. Like, I think it was kind of like they were both princesses, and that was part of it. And while they were really cool, badass princesses, I was never really a princess girl when I was little. I actually didn't have my first Disney princess that I loved and saw myself in until Tangled came out, and I was in my 20s. That was the first time I actually had a princess that was for me. So, like, I never really connected with Leia or Padme growing up, and it wasn't until Clone Wars and I met Ahsoka. Like, Ahsoka is everything to me. I think a lot of it is because I also found Ahsoka when I was in college, and I was going through a lot of difficult things in college, and my life was changing. My parents were divorcing, and I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, and I was changing majors, and I felt like I was constantly fucking up all the time. And so then I had this kid here. I saw this Padawan that was young, and yet while she was much younger than I was, I saw that this young girl was fucking up just as much as I was fucking up, and it was okay because she was learning through messing up. And I, for the first time, could see myself in a Star Wars character, and it was actually Ahsoka that made me fall in love with Clone Wars, and that made me fall in love with Star Wars. I saw her journey a lot as my journey, and I think a lot of little girls saw themselves in Ahsoka as well, and a lot of little boys too. I mean, Ashley Eckstein talks a lot about how she's had so many little boys come up to her and say that they saw themselves in Ahsoka. But, like, it was life-changing to have this character be a good guy, make her own choices, and walk her own path, and have that strength to walk her own path, and to walk, spoilers for season 5, to walk away from her path to start a new one. Because sometimes you do need to change your life goals, and sometimes you do need to change directions in your life, and that's okay. And it's been equally rewarding having Ahsoka in Rebels and seeing her as an adult, because now I'm an adult. And to have grown up with this character, to have someone so influential in my life, especially a character like Ahsoka, who is she's this character that I've had, that I've grown up with, and I see myself very much being a part of, always a part of my life, and a character that I love very much. And so it was Ahsoka who gave me this love of Star Wars that I wouldn't even be here with you right now, Chris, if not for Ahsoka. So I definitely, the inclusion of women in Star Wars has been very influential for me, because now as I'm getting older, I don't connect quite as well with Sabine, but Hera. Hera in Rebels is a character that I love very much, so her and Kanan are my two favorites. But Hera, I think it's incredibly important to know that the first person to ever pilot a B-Wing was a Twi'lek woman. That's incredibly powerful. And Hera's just this amazing character, and now we have Rey, and it's such a great new world, especially for females, because we are so often, it's 2016, and I work in a comic book store, and I still have men come in and be like, so why are you working in here? You're a fake geek girl. What's the summary of this comic? And I'm like, it's fucking 2016. I'm the assistant manager. I outrank every man in my store except for my owner. I mean, just leave me alone. I mean, we girls so often have to prove themselves to be these nerds, and to prove themselves as geeks, because it's not a boys club anymore.
Right. Well, you're the quote unquote. You see, and that I also think that's a little bit of an allusion too, that you guys are newcomers to genres, because
we've always been here. Well, we've just never been so front and center.
We were talking about Star Trek the other day, and it was basically after the first season or two of Star Trek, it was women who kept Star Trek. We wouldn't have Star Trek right now if it wasn't for Jo Trimble. BJO was how they spelled it. I think it was Bo Trimble. But, you know, and a lot of people do the complaining, and I am personally, technically,
it's females who have kept Doctor Who running.
I am against being like, you know, we have to, the thought that like, all right, we have to inject women and minorities in here to fulfill this checklist and all that.
Just
write good characters and have it reflect the reality of, you know, in Star Wars, it's a little jigglier because it's another galaxy or whatever. But still, the reality is you're watching humans play characters on screen. Have it reflect the reality. And in your life, you have female, and you most people have a pretty much 50-50 interaction with men and women, you know, because that's pretty much how it works out with babies. So, you know, have strong characters that are male and female. And I think a lot of the time, you know, back in the day, you had all the writers were men. So they wrote characters that they more identified with and could wrap their head around, and then when they were writing a female character, they were trying to write it as a man or whatever, and we're in an awkward phase where there's people trying to force it, and there's people, I think The Force Awakens is the perfect example of putting in, you know, the main character is a female character. You don't even think about it watching the movie. I instantly liked her character and identified with her character from the first shot. There was just something about the actress and the way this, you know, was, it was very, she was just like, okay, here's the main character. Here's the Luke Skywalker of these movies. And that's how you do it right. And it opens up a huge opportunity for little girls to see it. And, you know, I mean, as a guy, I had no problem following Rey through the whole movie. You know, I wasn't thinking like, I wish she was a guy so I could identify with her more. And I think women have been able to do that with male characters, you know, say watching Star Wars when it was originally out. If they didn't identify with Princess Leia, they could identify with Luke Skywalker or whatever. But I think women have in the past have had to do that more than men. Men have always had somebody that they could go, oh, that's me right there.
So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those things that's just, like, the argument about, like, oh, we're suddenly getting all these female characters in these movies. I'm like, yeah, that argument makes me mad, because look at the Avengers and the male-to-female ratio. Look at the X-Men and the male-to-female ratio in those movies. Look at Batman versus Superman and the male-to-female ratio in those movies. And the Justice League and, like, Sherlock. Look at Doctor Who. I mean, like, well, Doctor Who is a terrible example because it's almost always a female companion.
Right.
That's a terrible example. But I mean, like, you know, It's yeah, like that argument makes me so mad because I'm like, yeah, I thank you for like we finally have our time to shine. Shut up.
Well, I think with stuff like The Force Awakens, it'll just become one of those things where you, when you look back in time, you go like, oh yeah, there was some awkward moments with it, but yeah, now we have a more, you know, you end up with movies that are more realistic. You know, they're more, they feel more real as long as it's executed correctly. And you know, it's all, like it comes down to good writing. If you're trying to inject female characters in it and you're doing it just to do that and you don't really think about it other than that, you come out with crap. But you're probably going to come out with crap no matter what character you wrote.
And look at every action movie and the role of a female in every action movie.
Well, you know what I mean? It depends. I mean, if we're going to get into the feminist breakdown of it, you could break down, there's, you know, there's a damsel in distress type characters in action movies. But then there's the sort of, you know, kick-ass female that, like, sometimes can be, you know, is portrayed as sort of like the men's version of like, oh, yeah, that's hot with a kick-ass female. And then there's actual kick-ass females who are a developed character. I think it all, when it comes down to it, it's the quality of writing. Do you make them a real character or not, you know? And
yeah,
you could have
I'd actually love to see in more action movies, whether it's a male or a female lead. I want to see more of the protagonist crying. Because that's realistic.
Right, right, right. And, you know, I mean, that's
I want to see Liam Neeson cry.
Well, I'm trying to think of bad examples. And, the bad example that pops onto my head is a really bad example. Because the movie isn't out yet. But far as perception goes, the new Ghostbusters movie.
I would kind of agree with you with that. Because I have a double argument on this one. Because I kind of... On one hand, I'm like, oh, cool, a female Ghostbuster movie. But, like, at the same time, I'm just like, I don't feel like we really needed one. But then, at work...
Then you saw the trailers, right?
Well, the first trailer I thought was terrible. The second trailer was much, much better. But I will say, like...
Though. You know what I mean?
What?
I haven't laughed at anything on it yet, though.
There's a couple things. But, like, my problem with it is, like, I then had these couple male customers in my store... And one of them said, well, girls can't be Ghostbusters. And now I'm just like, oh, I want to fucking watch this show now just to prove them
I just
wrong.
Wonder if that guy, when I hear stuff like that, I'm like, is that guy just trolling you or does he really believe?
No, it was two guys talking together.
Oh my God. Have you ever seen that Our Valued Customers cartoon the guy does? He works in he's a cartoonist. He works in a comic shop, and he just does one panel quotes of things as customers say.
Oh,
they're priceless. But that sounds like the kind of thing that would end up on Our Valued Customers.
Yeah, and so like it's one of those things. Like I don't feel like we needed an all girl Ghostbusters movie, and I still don't.
It puts you in a bad position. It puts everybody in a bad position because Ghostbusters is so beloved. I mean, Bill Murray and Dan you know, the actors in it, everything about it is so beloved and so unique. And it's like, and the first instinct is to go, oh, to put all women in the role is a gimmick, you know. Somebody came up with the idea in the boardroom and said, what if we do it? And if it comes out crummy, then we can say they're sexist, so you can't lose or whatever. And
that's exactly what it feels like.
That's what it feels. When I saw the trailer for it, the thing about the trailer, and then when I heard the initial reports, I'm like, okay, the writer and the actresses in it are all, and they didn't make all the actresses, like, they didn't make them all up real pretty. They made them look like scruffy nerds. You know, they made them look like us, like real people. Yeah. And they're kind of goofy. And it's like, good. So because the original guys were, you know, there was no dashing character. Bill Murray was the dashing guy in it. And he's a schlub. So they're all schlubby. And I was like, that's good. I hear the writer's, you know, a really funny writer. And that he has, he's worked with the one woman before on many movies, and the director, they've all worked together, and it had the same theoretical dynamic as the original Ghostbusters. But then I saw those trailers, and like the jokes are like tired jokes from every trailer. And the I think the only hope for that movie is the jokes that were not seen in the trailer are spectacularly awesome, and they don't want to reveal them and lower expectations. But that's sort of an outlying hope, you know. The second trailer, I was like, there's nothing visual about it that looks special or interesting. There's, you know, the jokes are basically like, oh no, that can't be good, you know, that sort of stuff. I think that's literally one of the jokes, and just trite humor. So I don't know, but it's just doesn't work fluidly, you know. If they would have just made the female Ghostbusters movie and really spent a lot of time doing a good job and didn't say anything about it, which is stupid of me to think, because you gotta, you know, they're publicizing their movie. So, but if they didn't publicize it and just presented it, and then people saw it and were like, oh, that was really funny. And, you know, if all the characters are good and stuff, 10 minutes in the movie, you're not worried about whether they're all women or not. You know, you're just like following along the story and the characters.
I also just think this isn't a great time, because like pretty much everything in the last 3 years have been sequels or
remakes or reboots.
Yeah. And so like maybe if this was like another 5 years down the line, that'd be something a little bit different too. It's just
people were really excited about there being a new Ghostbusters until Harold Ramis died. And then I think they were like, well, you can't, you know, because the cast isn't so old that they couldn't do a great version or the Ghostbusters towards the end, bringing in new ghosts. They could have done something like that, and they're all really good actors. And but when Harold Ramis died, it was just sort of like, oh, okay, well, that would have been nice. But and I think it took a lot of the wind out of it. But that's straying from the topic. And I think basically what I was saying is, you know, we're in that time period where people are trying to incorporate women and minorities into movies, and some people are doing it well, some people are not doing it well, and hopefully the people that are doing it well will set the template for the future, and we'll get to a point where nobody worries about it anymore, and it just becomes part of writing a movie, and then you end up with just more, you know, movies that reflect the times more and the nature of reality more.
I think my, like, for example, like my complaint about the Rogue One trailer was there wasn't enough aliens. And the reason I say that, because it always feels like the humans are always saving the day.
Yes. Well, yeah, I you just put your finger on something that I hadn't, that was bothering
me
about
it. Because to me, like, aliens kind of represent all the, this is going to sound so racist, I just realized how racist this is about to sound, but kind of represents all the other races of our planet, which sounds terrible, and I don't mean it like that, but it's always white guys that save the day in Star Wars. Does that make sense?
Well, I mean, Force Awakens was the Hispanic guy who came out from this, you know, came out of the sunset to save the day.
Yeah. And it's like I actually really do want to see like more like black people and like Puerto Ricans or like Polynesian people or like,
you
want to
see some Twi'leks and
I want to see more of Hera. Like I would love to see Hera in Rogue One. You don't even know, but I know we're not going to get there. But like I want to see more like alien races saving things. So it's not just
we don't know visually. There. I mean, I think the trailer right now is to not show too much of it and to trot out the cast. So it means the cast
humans
we're focusing on is going to be mostly human, but hopefully there'll be some more aliens in it, or, you know, I hope
because
so.
There's more than just aliens there's more than just humans in the galaxy who's suffering from.
Well, if it's all humans, Hope, then we will get together a group of Jay Guys and Jedi's listeners, and we will protest Rogue One and want them to include more Twi'leks, more of all the alien races. We want a Hutt. I want a Hutt.
Well, like, I think that's like why I'm like so ruined by Clone Wars, because we see
all these
over
the place.
Places.
Yeah.
Yeah, like we see all these different aliens and they're all fighting.
And, I mean, a lot of them are humanoid aliens, but you know, whatever Hondo is.
Yeah, Yeah, or even like the Tarugas, like Ahsoka, like they're all aliens and they're all fighting the Separatists. But then we don't get that in the movies.
Having a couple of the lizardy people that like where Hondo and where what's the bounty hunters? Cad Bane, you know, those types would have been nice. Some more.
Well, we do have Cad Bane's race in Shattered Empire in the Poe Dameron comic. Because we have Luo.
Mm-hmm. But so I'd love to see some of that show up in Rogue One, too. They need
I'm
to include those races.
I'm still rooting for Cad Bane to be in the Boba Fett movie, but that's just me.
We'll have to get after Disney for being human-centric in their Star Wars movies to save money, probably.
But I mean, it just... There's an entire race, like a universe of people who are.
Yeah, we'll dress up as Twi'leks and show up at the show. Where are we? Why don't we get to fight the Empire?
Yeah, especially since like the Empire is nothing but like white guys.
Why don't we get to say it's about green guys?
Yeah, it's all about white guys. I mean,
it's
like
about green guys and purple people and all that stuff.
Purple people eater.
And the purple people eaters, which is could be anything from microbes to actual cannibalistic purple people eaters. All right, we're just getting silly now.
So final question that I didn't write down that I'm going to throw at you.
Okay.
So how do you feel about season one as a whole?
I love it. They're feeling their way, and I love the way that they're feeling their way. You know, there's not that they're experimenting. And they're hitting a lot more than they're missing. You know, I think some of the techno-y music was a miss. Other than the music, I think all of their it's like all the little directions that they went in to see where they could go were all good directions and all could be developed. I really like how Dave Filoni works. He starts out sort of safe at the beginning, but quickly starts experimenting. And that's, I mean, very much on display in season one. And I love it. I love it. I love seeing how they're figuring out things that they're going to, you know, between the animation and, you know, in later seasons, they start thinking, hey, let's make fun of, or not make fun of, let's pay homage to giant monster movies and westerns and even specific ones. You know, they'll have references to specific genre movies and stuff like that, and they have fun with it. And you can see that start, you can see them dipping their toes in the water and going like, ooh, the water's kind of nice. And it's a very strong first season for something like this, you know, that could have stumbled, you know, in many different ways. And they got off to a running and leaping start.
Yeah. For me, I think it's probably one of the strongest first seasons in a lot of shows. Especially something as beloved as Star Wars. Like, there's a reason this allowed an entire new generation to grow up with Star Wars, because we don't have movies in this time period anymore, but we have your weekly Star Wars fix. And it's not perfect, and there's definitely a lot of flaws, but it's absolutely fantastic. And you have these great characters, and you're seeing this new universe. It's the same universe, but it feels new, you know?
Yeah.
And just, I always say the best part of the prequels is Clone Wars. And to fill in these shades between the movies, especially getting these characters that you know and love, but while using these known, loved characters like Anakin and Obi-Wan, you're allowed to branch off and see other characters and this war from other people's point of views, like through Ahsoka. And I think the addition of Ahsoka and including women into this and like expanding this universe and filling in this 3-year gap is just absolutely amazing. And it's one of the best opening seasons of any show.
Yep. They could have developed a simple formula and just stuck to it and just sort of done a watered down Star Wars with a simple formula of
the weekly battle,
battle with Grievous running off at the end and then spinning their wheels between the movies. They could have done that very easily. And they instead chose to do the opposite, which hats off. It's why it lasted as long as it did.
Yeah. Oh, it had planned. If it wasn't for the Disney buyout, we would have gotten at least two more seasons.
Yeah. And who knows, it could have just kept going and going because it was not exhausting its possibilities. It's a whole universe, and if you know how to exploit it, there's infinite possibilities there. So
yeah,
they knew how to do it. And this is what I say, if you people have enjoyed, this is a smooth little transition here, enjoyed Hope Molyneux bearing her soul this episode, you'd be shocked to find out that she does it all the time, and not just on Two True Freaks and Jay Guys and Jedi, but in other places. And where are those places where they can find you?
I feel like I'm really on the spot now.
You know where they are.
I do. You can find me at What the Fangirl. Gosh, I'm actually about to start writing like a very emotional piece today about fandom, Chris, so thanks.
Hey, let's keep you in that space, man.
No, it's been a very emotional fandom week for me. Having to do with Snapchat and an actor, and having to step back from Snapchat because of this actor. So yeah, I was about to start writing a piece about that. Yeah, you can find me at What the Fangirl. I'm also at Hope Molyneux on Twitter, and you can also follow us on Twitter at JGuys and Jedis. And where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, where I'm always pumping out podcasts, and there's about 40 other people in working on podcasts, whether on their own or in concert with each other. We got all sorts of combinations. We got Star Trek, Star Wars, people talking about every flavor of comic you could ever imagine. Horror movies, B movies, Godzilla movies.
Godzilla.
Look, it's Godzilla. That's what they got to do, a redneck Godzilla movie where Godzilla storms through the South. Oh, hell! And people with their shotguns.
Just going through the swamp, and people, no, and would be like, oh, it's a normal Tuesday.
Yeah, eating gators and stuff. It would be awesome. Mm-hmm. It'll be called Godzilla. And yeah, that's twotruefreaks.com. And of course, there's a Two True Freaks on Twitter run by Gene, the podcasting machine, our Energizer Bunny.
Yeah. Awesome, total thing. If you like us bearing our souls and me crying on podcasts and and all of our dirty Yoda puns and stuff like that, give us a review on iTunes. It helps people find the show, and or at least rate us on iTunes. And we'll, even though we record ahead of time, we will read your review on the show. And we like hearing what you guys have to say or not say about us.
Yep, we love all questions and all reviews. And of course, there's a Two True Freaks Facebook page, and we post up the Jay Guy shows on there, so you can talk about episodes on there. You can email us, or you can iTunes review us.
We have an email.
Yeah. Okay. Never mind.
Do we have an email for
that? We probably do. I don't remember it off the classy. That's Jay Guys and Jedi. Classy.
Classy at twotruefreaks.com. No, that is not our email. Do not use that. We should probably put up an email so we can get questions
We'll figure it out.
It is right now. Just give it to us.
We're only 1/6 of the way through, so.
Yeah, technically 1/7 if you count Bad Batch and Utapau.
Which we probably will.
I am watching freaking Bad Batch. I don't even care if you're with me. And we'll have the Christmas special, and we'll have Rebels. We want to talk about... We got to figure out when we're going to talk about Clone Wars comics and stuff.
The Tartakovsky Clone Wars series. There's just a wealth of material for us to cover. But next time, we will be back, and we're not even going to slow down. We'll be jumping right into Season 2.
Yay, more Cad Bane! I'm so excited.
So more George Kurstick too.
Yeah. So I guess until next time, let's Season 1 die and be with you. I don't know. I don't have anything written.
Very positive there.
You're dead to me, Season 1. You're dead. Get out of here.
No looking back.
Never. Don't look back. Don't you ever look back. What's that song? I'm on the road.
Yeah, it's Don Henley, Boys of Summer. Don't look back. You can never look back. It's a Deadhead sticker on a Cadillac.
Yeah.
And the voice in his head said, don't look back. You can never look back.
That's what it is. I heard it on the radio the other day. Okay, bye, guys. All right.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TwoTrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at TwoTrueFreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
And this is your Uncle Don saying good night.
Good night, little kids. Good night.
We're off?
Good. Well, that ought to hold the little bastards.